Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win. Like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Welcome back in. Hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the NCAA tournament. Looking ahead to Tennessee and Longwood coming up as well. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in David Teal from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. David, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. Happy March.
Happy March to you as well. Going to be an awesome tournament, and we're looking forward to it. So, David, what do you think of this matchup for Tennessee against Longwood? What can Vols fans expect in your mind in this matchup?
Well, first of all, let me issue a blanket apology to all Vols fans, because I picked Tennessee to make the Final Four, which means they are due.
So did Rex Road. It's all good.
But in Longwood, guys, you're going to find a team that's ranked in the top 20 nationally in three-point accuracy, one that does not blink in the face of deficits, overcame a double-digit hole in the quarterfinals of its conference tournament, ran through the Big South at 15-1, and then three more wins in its conference tournament to finish out the league slate at 18-1, first ever NCAA appearance. Guys, before Griff Aldridge became the head coach at Longwood 4 years ago, Longwood was 130 and 312 in the previous 14 seasons. The job he's done in reviving this program is remarkable.
No question about it. And one thing I do want to tell you, Robbie and Michelle, we have David Teal is the GOAT of Virginia sports writers. So I just want as a graduate of Prince George High School, I'd be proud Prince George High Royal. I just everyone in Virginia knows that David Teal is the GOAT of Virginia sports writers. So appreciate you having you on, David. And I just read your Griff Aldridge piece for the Times-Dispatch, and it's this is a fascinating story. Tell the listeners a little bit about a very unusual path to coaching college basketball.
Right. I mean, he was a Division III player, guys, at Hampton, Sydney. Did a year as a graduate assistant, but he was brilliant. So he went off to UVA Law School, ends up as a partner in the biggest firm in Houston. Then he practices overseas for that firm. He comes back. He starts an oil and gas corporation. Then he becomes CFO of a financial investment house. And he's living large in Houston, but he's also started this faith-based AAU program in the inner city in the Third Ward to kind of still whet his basketball appetite. And then his former teammate and best friend, Ryan Odom from Hampton, Sydney, calls him, Ryan, then the head coach at UMBC, and says, "Hey, come join me." And then a couple years later, we all know what happens. UMBC upsets UVA, first 16 seed to win in the tournament. And a couple of weeks later, Griff Aldridge is the head coach at Longwood, which, by the way, is only about a 15-minute drive from his alma mater of Hampton, Sydney.
David Teal on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, David, you mentioned you had Tennessee going to the Final Four. What do you like about this Vols team? What stands out to you about the team that Rick Barnes has put together?
Defense. Man, I'm a big metrics guy, And I think they're third, aren't they, in KenPom's defensive efficiency?
Yep.
You know, like that formula a lot. A lot of it also is recency bias, you know, having watched the way they went through the SEC tournament. You know, so impressed with the Southeastern Conference all year between Kentucky and Auburn and Tennessee. And to me, you know, I thought, okay, why not?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, I think Tennessee, I think Tennessee is good enough, and that's been their calling card for sure. With Longwood, as you mentioned, David, you know, one of the things that we often see when the lower seeds pull off an upset in this event is, you know, hitting 3-point shots. Also, sometimes you'll see a player who, you know, for whatever reason, maybe was at a high major school, has found a spot at the school in question and has really flourished. And I know Longwood has a guy like that, of course, who was with the Hokies and Wake Forest, correct?
Yes, Isaiah Wilkins, who was MVP of the Big South tournament. He was, I think, first or second team All Big South in the regular season. He's their second leading scorer. And here's kind of a curious Tennessee tie, guys. Longwood's best player, Justin Hill, he is the son of Donna Holt Hill. Donna Holt Hill was the ACC Player of the Year and first team All-American at UVA. And whom did she lose to twice in the NCAA tournament? At Summit in Tennessee.
You're always finding these angles, David. That's good stuff.
So, David, as you look at this Longwood team, what do you think has to go well for them to hang in there against Tennessee as they take on the Vols tomorrow? You mentioned the Vols defense. That's been something that's traveled with them all season. What has to go right for Longwood for them to make it a game in your mind?
Yeah, guys, they have to hit a bunch of threes, and you guys have seen how these underdog stories work. If they hang around long enough in the game, and then the folks in the arena who aren't affiliated with either team, who might be waiting for the next game, who have stayed from the previous game, they start to get into it, and there starts to be a buzz in the building, and the underdog team just kind of feeds off that. That, to me, would be their formula. I don't see it happening, but, hey, 14 over 3 is hardly big news when we've seen 16 over 1 and 15 over 2 several times.
Yeah, and of course there is the affiliation here with Griff Aldrich and the first 16 over 1, which is interesting. David, how good is Justin Hill?
I think he's pretty good. You know, he can get his own. You know, he plays on a team that is balanced offensively, so I don't think he feels the pressure of, oh my gosh, I've got to come up with a big shot, or I have to get a bucket here. So that, I believe, helps him. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a pretty darn good mid-major player.
David Teal from the Richmond Times-Dispatch has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. David, really looking forward to this game coming up tomorrow for Tennessee and Longwood. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, you David. As well. Anytime we can get a goat on here, Joe Rexrode, I'm all for it. The goat of Virginia sports writing. So the Joe Rexrode of Virginia sports writing.
No. I'm not saying a diseased goat. That's what I am. Like a greatest of all time goat. He's goated, as the kids like to say. He's an incredible. I think he's been like Virginia sports writer of the year like 15 times or something ridiculous like that. Yeah. Great writer, and I think he laid it out there, you know, Longwood, but it's exactly right. I always feel like those, you know, you mentioned earlier, Robbie, the Middle Tennessee Michigan State game. That was a classic example of, it's not just that the underdog feeds off the crowd, which certainly happens, and I'm not sure how tickets go, if it's two separate sessions with tickets tomorrow, but if it's not, those Kentucky fans are going to be all over that building. And I have a feeling a couple of them might be like, go Longwood, right? A little bit, huh?
Maybe so.
And a couple of the Tennessee fans might be like, go St. Peter's.
That may be true too. But I think it's not just the underdog feeding off it. I think without question, I know that, like, you could see it with Michigan State in that game. It just, as a game goes on, you are feeling it. You are feeling the pressure so much, especially if you're going into a tournament and everybody's talking. I mean, that team was supposed to go to the Final Four. This Tennessee team, there's some Final Four buzz. It's not like, you know, unanimous across the board. I'd say more people are picking Arizona, but certainly they're supposed to go on a run. And so there is a tendency, I'm not saying to overlook, but you're looking at the bracket, you're like, Colorado State, Michigan, okay. If Longwood hangs and hangs and hangs, it just gets so suffocating sometimes, I feel like, on the favorite. And that's where it's – I think the start of these games are so huge. In that Middle Tennessee game, they came right out just firing. They built a lead, and then it's – you know, you got that favorite on roller skates a little bit. So first few minutes of this game, the setting a tone. I mean, Tennessee should be able to guard these guys. They can guard anybody. We just saw them clamp down on Kentucky. But, you know, you got enough. They do have several guys who hit threes who are right around 40%, and that can be dangerous.
We'll take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. What's your confidence level that Tennessee and Rick Barnes can make a deep run in this NCAA tournament? That's coming up on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to GameNashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. This week's new deal is half off a $50 gift card for Bavarian Beer House at Opry Mills. Bavarian Beer House, Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, is a place full of fun, food, music, and most importantly, beer. You can enjoy traditional bratwurst, schnitzel, giant pretzels, and more in an Oktoberfest-inspired space. Visit BeerHouseNashville.com for their live music schedule. You can head to GameNashville.com/deals now to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to David Teal for joining us in the last segment. An interesting matchup against Longwood. As David pointed out, they can shoot the three really well. I think they're going to have to if they're going to hang in there with Tennessee. My question for you, Joe Rexroad, is obviously you've got confidence in this Tennessee team to make a deep run. Why do you think that this could be the team that Tennessee finally makes it to the Final Four with Rick Barnes?
Well, if you want to compare this team to the 2019 team that I think could have done it. One thing about that team that I don't think it got enough attention until the season was over, but, you know, David Teal said last segment, he's a big metrics guy, and I am too. I mean, I think that there's a lot of reason to follow along with the metrics in college hoops. Typically, the formula, if you can be top 20 in both KenPom efficiency measures, offense and defense, typically that's the profile of a team that wins a national championship. But the Vols 2017-18 team, which wasn't very different from the 2018-19, basically the same group, that was an elite defensive efficiency group in 2017-18, and it really fell off in 2018-19 into the 40s. Now, the offense got better. It was a better offensive team, but that team – it was, you know, that team played its best basketball, like when they beat Gonzaga in Arizona, you know, when they were number one in the country and held on to that for a few weeks. They were going to SEC Barnes that year, and like you just knew it was over for those teams. And at times they were, I mean, I loved the composition of that team because they had Jordan Bone at point guard and, of course, Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams. I mean, that's one thing this team does not have. They do not have the guy that – you throw the ball to him in the post, and he's either going to get you a bucket, he's going to get to the line, or he's going to get a shooter a wide-open shot. They don't have that. They do have the point guard for the first time since that. They also have, as David Teal mentioned, the number three defense in the country in terms of defensive efficiency. It's been consistent, and it's great, and that's where I start. It's the defense. If you're great on defense, that good, then we saw it. What did we say before the SEC tournament? Okay, you've been doing great at home. You've been lighting these teams up in TBA with 20,000 people screaming. Can you do it in a neutral site? They were basically in a road environment against Kentucky. Defense travels. Defense is going to travel to this thing too. So that's where I start. But if you want to go on the other side of the ball, I mean, Kennedy Chandler, frankly, he's a better player than Jordan Bone. Now, is he a better player than junior Jordan Bone? You know, it's close, but I would still say yes. I would still say, like, if he plays like he did last weekend, yeah, he does stuff that Jordan Bone couldn't do. It's just it's that simple. He's a better shooter, and he's just he's lightning when he decides to attack someone. And then Josiah James, who I'm writing about today, by the way, for The Athletic for tomorrow, is a very underrated player in college basketball. I didn't realize how hurt he's been this year until talking to some people this week. And he is healthy now, and you're seeing it all come together for him. He's hitting shots. He's getting in the lane. He's always been a good passer. And he's an elite defender who can guard any person on the court. So I think they have the things in place, but the question I have, well, the two things, the lulls offensively, for sure. You can't have those. They just seem to compound for 4 or 5 minutes. That could really be damaging. And then the interior, who's going to step up and play great inside? They need at least a couple of those four guys to play great. And I feel like they need at least one of those freshmen to really step up. Brandon Huntley Hatfield did step up big time against Kentucky.
Oh, we have Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up here in about 10 minutes at 8:30. Get his thoughts on all things NFL free agency. I agree. I mean, Kennedy Chandler right now, it just feels like he's figured things out. And not only him, but just the combination of guard play that they have with Ziegler getting big minutes and him handling the ball and Chandler playing a little bit more off the ball. And we know what Vescovi's brought to the table all season long. You know, earlier in the season, we were talking about, you know, the offensive lulls that this team could have and getting worried about that. I have not passed that. Like, I still worried that ultimately that could be what ends up doing in this Tennessee team. I'm less worried about that now than I was this time a couple of weeks ago, just because, you know, I think that this team has found out what makes them successful offensively. And a good way to get out of those lulls is having good guard play and being able to generate your own offense that way. So I'm not saying that that won't happen and that Tennessee's still not susceptible to, you know, those 5-6 minute stretches where they just are abysmal offensively, because we've seen it happen. But I feel better about this team's ability to overcome that, significantly better than I did this time a couple weeks ago.
You got to touch the paint. And yep, like I said, back then, it's a great thing to have, you know, a Grant Williams or a post player who, you know, not only can get his own, but is so good at making that diagonal pass into a shooter, just sensing the double coming or the dig coming and doing the right thing out of that. They don't have that. Although, you know, I like how Fulkerson played last week too. That's another cause for optimism. I feel like he's, when he wants to face someone up and spin on him and stuff, he can at least get to the line pretty well. So some matchups don't work out great for him. He's still going to be uprooted by stronger guys. But like in this matchup, for example, a game like this, I think you probably see a lot of him out there. But Kenny Chandler is how you touch the paint. And Zakai Ziegler too. I mean, he can get to spots. That's another thing. I can't think of too many teams that have two point guards who can both kind of interchange one. A lot of times they will now, they'll put Ziegler actually at the point, actually have him initiate the set, and they're trying to get Chandler a shot. But how many times last weekend, whether it was an outside shot or, I think more impressively and importantly, a drive into the lane, did Chandler answer a run from the other team? He seems to just have that clock in his head now that you get as you get older, that you just sense like, okay, this is an important moment. We can't let that 7-0 run become 9-0 or 10-0. I'm going to answer right now. I mean, he put Ty Washington in cement a couple times.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Which I was a bit stunned by, honestly. Like, one of those moves, I was like, he went by him, like he was standing still, and then he was finishing halfway. He's special. And, yes, it brings to mind TJ Ford, who was a sophomore, so he had kind of had a little more time to grow. But TJ Ford didn't really have much of an NBA career. He was a high pick. It was disappointing in the NBA. But as a college player in the 2002-03 season as a sophomore, he was incredible. And that's Rick Barnes' Final Four team. And there's certainly some things about his game that come to mind now with Kendi Chandler.
Yep. I mean, I think you've got to feel great about the way that he's playing as he's heading into this tournament. Now, I know some Tennessee fans, and I always love when these arguments come up, that were really hoping Tennessee would lose in the SEC tourney so that they would get a loss, quote, out of the way before they head into the tourney. What do you think about that one, Rex Road? Could they be too hot coming into the tourney?
Hot teams lose all the time in the tourney, and teams that have bitter disappointments in their conference tourney make runs all the time. But you know what? Sometimes hot teams stay hot too.
They do.
I think you want to go ahead and if you're a put yourself in the shoes of the coaches or the players. If you need a wake-up call, fine. Like maybe Auburn does. Maybe KD Johnson, who went 0 for 14 with like 5 turnovers against Texas A&M.
Maybe green light, baby.
Yeah, maybe he needs a way like, hey, KD, this team could go all the way. But when you get to 0 for 9 or 10, please give the ball to Jabari Smith. Yeah. Please give the ball to Walker. So sometimes teams need a reset like that. Tennessee doesn't. Tennessee just needs to, when the bad stretches happen, remember to not just settle. Because the turnovers can be, here and there, they still have turnover issues. But mostly it's, I think when those lulls happen, they fall a little bit too in love with just shooting threes. So that's it. Other than that, like their game, they've got it figured out. They scout teams extremely well. Their coaching staff's really good at all that stuff, preparing a team to play. And they are very, very connected. So no, win. Just keep winning. Doesn't guarantee any wins in this tournament. But if you're playing your best basketball, that's what you want to be doing. And that's what they are doing.
We'll have Matt Duchesne, Predators forward, coming up at 9 o'clock here on the program. Get his thoughts on another big win last night for the Predators against the Pittsburgh Penguins. When we come back, we'll be joined by our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get the latest on the Deshaun Watson situation and all things NFL free agency. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. I'm Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on? How are we doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
You're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Charles, obviously a lot of stuff going on right now. I want to start with the Baker Mayfield side of this. He put what essentially to me looked like a goodbye letter up to the city of Cleveland last night. What do you think of that, and what do you think the market would be for Baker Mayfield should he be made available?
Yeah, it was a little weird what he posted. I mean, it was sort of an opaque goodbye letter, very confusing. I'll put it to you this way. There's no finality right now with Baker Mayfield in the Browns organization. They haven't, decided to trade him, and there's a pursuit of Deshaun Watson. Obviously that's something that is public. It's out there. I think the Browns knew once we engage in this with Deshaun Watson, it's going to become public. People are going to realize that we're attempting to upgrade over Baker Mayfield, and it's going to create a problem for us. And that's the bridge that they're going to have to cross if Watson ultimately doesn't pan out for the Cleveland Browns. They're going to have to figure out how does this impact our relationship with Baker going forward. But I think they want to first determine whether or not Watson is in the fold or not. And if he's not, and Baker basically says, hey, look, this is irreparable damage to our relationship. I can't be a quarterback here now. I know that you've, tried to move on without me. It's time for us to part company. I think the Browns would attempt to see what his market is out there. Now, maybe it's the Indianapolis Colts. Obviously, the Colts right now are having a hard time nailing down a quarterback. You know, I think there are other teams out there that looked at Baker Mayfield when he was drafted and thought there was something there to work with. I don't think you would have no market whatsoever. Let's remember, I mean, even Sam Bradford, the Jets were able to deal, you know, Sam Bradford when it appeared he had no market. So I don't want to say what the market is yet because it's not really there at this point. I don't think it's going to be great. Remember, Baker Mayfield is due $18 million next year. That's on the books. It's locked in. It's guaranteed money. And the Browns might have to actually eat some of that salary to be able to deal him. They might not be able to get full freight if a team doesn't want to pay that $18 million. So, I don't know. We're not down that avenue yet. And it was funny because when it went up, I thought, oh, wow, like maybe this Watson deal's coming together for Cleveland already, and they're trying to shop Baker Mayfield right now. So I reached out to the Browns, and I was like, hey, you know, does this mean Watson's coming, and are you attempting to move Mayfield right now? They said no. We're waiting, just like everyone else with Watson. Every team that's involved right now, and it looks like it's four teams, they're all sort of sitting there going, okay, we're waiting to see what Watson ultimately decides, but nothing's finished right now for the Cleveland Browns.
And so Baker's basically just like the angry teenager who saw like a TikTok of their friends at the mall and then is like putting up like a, like sort of like a little bitter message on Insta or whatever, you know. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, he's definitely he has engaged in social media, you know, multiple times in the last couple of years when he has felt, you know, disrespected, you know, either by a reporter or by the franchise. I think, you know, part of that dynamic that's developed between Baker and the Browns and Baker and the fan base and Baker and reporters is that, you know, he's certainly taken his emotions to, you know, the internet at times. He's certainly taken it to social media. Also, a lot of the things that have transpired between Baker and the Browns or Baker's agents and the Browns, that always seems to end up out there publicly. And the Browns have kind of gotten used to, hey, whatever happens between us and Baker, we know it's going to be reported half an hour after it happens, an hour after it happens the next day. His camp or Baker himself, he airs out, you know, they air out pretty much everything that's going on between, you know, Browns coaching staff, the Browns front office, and Baker. And it's been a frustrating part of it, I think, for the Browns. But I think at this stage, they're used to it. So when that went up last night, I was kind of like, man, the Browns are probably, you know, pissed about this. They were just like, yeah, you know, like it's kind of how it is. And they're used to it at this point. And they're, you know, they're not getting bent out of shape because right now they're like, look, we need to square this with Watson one way or another. It's going to work or it's not. And then we'll deal with Baker once this is over. So I guess from my standpoint, they're just like, okay, whatever. He can say what he wants. We'll manage that when it comes time to manage that. Right now, we're trying to deal with this trade pursuit.
Like parents of teenagers. So, Charles, you've done a lot of reporting on Deshaun Watson for Yahoo Sports. You've got a piece up on that, and it sounds like teams are kind of anticipating the 6-game suspension, but also important stuff happened yesterday. Do you have any insight on that? And how important is it that Deshaun Watson says something?
Well, so yesterday was the day that he sat for a deposition. It was expected that he would not invoke the Fifth Amendment, and he would actually answer questions in the deposition. Now, prior to yesterday, because the grand jury was still considering or was slated to consider the criminal charges against him or you know, essentially the criminality of the case, his lawyer, Rusty Hardin, had said, look, he's not answering anything in depositions until this grand jury situation is wrapped up. Well, that happened last Friday. They declined to indict him. And by, you know, essentially the guidance of his attorney previously, he said, hey, once that's wrapped up, he's going to answer questions under oath. He's not going to invoke his Fifth Amendment. That was so Tuesday was the first opportunity for him to sit and answer questions. Teams wanted to know, what did this guy say under oath, you know, in a deposition, now that he's not going to be invoking his Fifth Amendment. They wanted to basically hear, how's he going to answer to this? You know, because ultimately, if we trade for him, he's going to go into court. He's going to have to testify if he doesn't invoke his Fifth Amendment. We want to know what he's going to say in a civil trial. That's important to us. So yesterday was that first opportunity. The problem with depositions, you know, we don't know what gets said if a lawyer doesn't want to tell us, if no one involved wants to essentially leak what exactly happens in a proceeding. We're sort of out here waiting to know precisely what, and NFL teams are the same way. They can't sit in a deposition. They have to hope a lawyer will tell them. And so as far as what happened on Tuesday, we don't know exactly what he said in a deposition under oath. And that's going to be part of, I guess, this equation that teams are going through. The four teams that are attempting to trade for him are sorting out. But it is a very important component of this, because teams basically are saying, look, if we deal for him, he's still got these civil cases. We know that's going to have to run its course. So we kind of want to know what's going to unfold in a courtroom. That's important to us. And we want to know what his side of the story is. That's also important to us. And so, you know, there's still a lot left in front of him legally, even though a grand jury didn't choose to ultimately indict him. People have to understand, that's not a proclamation of innocence from a grand jury. They're just saying, look, the evidence wasn't here to indict him criminally, so we're going to move on from this, and he doesn't have to, you know, plead to anything. But that's not a statement of innocence. It's just, hey, we're doing this in a fact-based system. The evidence isn't here. We got to move on, and the rest of it can be sorted out in these civil suits. And remember, he's still got 22 civil suits that he has to, he has to go through the legal process, which means 22 depositions, 22 potential, actually sitting in a courtroom. There's a lot left on the docket for Deshaun Watson.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, we talked to you the week after Tom Brady retired, and you said, you know, I wouldn't be so sure that Brady's done for good. Well, it turns out he's not, and 40 days was good enough for Tom Brady to find a way to come back in the NFL. What did you make of that, and how surprised were you that it happened as quickly as it did with Brady unretiring from the league?
Yeah, the 40 days is weird. Like, to me, I thought, okay, you know, the guy sits out during the off season, and then it's more of a standard. We've seen this happen before with players. They decide before training camp kicks off, okay, you know what, I sat out. I kind of felt like I wanted to be done, but, you know, I changed my mind. I've had months and months to process this. It's really odd to me, like, what changed in 40 days? Like, this is, not only is it the same franchise, but it's now a lesser team. He's essentially going back to a team that's not as good as the one he left at the start of February. And yet, 40 days later, Tom Brady suddenly decides I want to play again, and it's going to be for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It led me to ask myself, like, what happened after the season, like, emotionally? Something clearly triggered this, you know, for him to walk away. And then all of a sudden, everything changes, or enough changes 40 days later that he comes back. I mean, there are different ways you can look at this, and if people want to be conspiratorial about it, which I actually think this is one of the few cases where I don't think there's anything wrong with being conspiratorial about it, because the 40-day time frame lends itself to being like, hey, that's not normal. It feels like something clearly happened here that we just don't know about yet. I do think it's possible that Tom Brady walked and then thought, hey, maybe I want to come back for another team. And essentially what happened at the combine was Bruce Arians said, hey, guess what? He ain't playing anywhere else. It's here or nowhere, and that's how it's going to be. And then they made sure that people knew they were kicking tires on other quarterbacks. They were looking at other quarterbacks. Rick Stroud, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, named some of the other quarterbacks, including, hey, they watched film on Baker Mayfield. And when I was at the combine, it was Deshaun Watson is a serious, candidate to end up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not only that, he likes the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. If Tom's not coming back, that's a team that's going to be high on his list of priorities. It was making, the rounds, that information at the combine. And part of that, I thought, is this the kind of motivate if Brady's sort of on the fence about coming back or not? Is this sort of a push by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Well, next thing you know, he's at a Man U match, meeting with the Glazers, and, he's posting a video where, he's clearly talking to Ronaldo, and he makes the face when he gets asked, what are you going to do? Well, Tom posted that, and it's like, okay, this is weird. This feels like the groundwork for him to come back, even as he's coming back. I get it. If people are like, you know what, he was trying to come back for another team. That's the conspiracy theory. The Bucks said no. He had no choice but to just go, okay, well, I don't want to retire, so I made my little stand here. It didn't work, and so I'm going to come back in the fold. I actually think that that's a pretty sound read of it. I just don't know that we're ever going to know for sure unless Brady admits it.
So just real quick back on Watson, Charles. Right now, who's your favorite? It feels like the whole AFC South is like in a huge battle royale to land him. Where do you ultimately think Deshaun Watson is playing quarterback next?
So I don't have a favorite, but I can tell you that the teams involved sure seem to think that Atlanta is sort of this team that has kind of come out of the ether and is really a serious threat to sign him. And I think the there is some kind of understandable traction there. He lives in Atlanta in the offseason, at least part of the offseason. He's made Atlanta his home. He's from Georgia. There's some thought process that, like, where he lives is very important to him. That's why kind of Miami was something that he was really interested in. He clearly likes the city of Atlanta. I think he could see himself being there. I think Atlanta, and by the way, Arthur Blank is in on this. Ownership was going to be important no matter where he goes, but ownership being part of sort of, I don't want to say the recruitment, but the pitch, hey, here's what the future's going to look like for you in our organization. Here's how things are going to be shaped. If you have an owner who is on board with that saying, hey, I want this, I want you, I'm okay, like, with everything that's going on with you right now, I'm okay supporting you and standing behind you, is going to be a really big deal. I don't know if that's legitimate or not, but I can just tell you that when you talk to the other teams involved, they're now pointing in Atlanta. Yeah, it kind of feels like it's an Atlanta lean. I don't know that there's really a real true lean by Deshaun Watson's camp at this stage between any of the four teams. And the four teams, so we might as well get this out there. I mean, I think people should know at this point, but the Cleveland Browns, the Atlanta Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, obviously, and what's the other team that I'm missing here?
The Saints, right? Saints?
Yes, the New Orleans Saints. Yes, absolutely. The New Orleans Saints. Yeah, that's really the four that when you talk to everybody involved, they're like, this is kind of a locked-in group. It's going to be among these four. I want to hedge a little bit on that because, there's always this idea that there could be a mystery team out there that we don't know about. It's like Mitch Trubisky. Everyone you talk to is like, he's going to the Giants. Like, we would love to have him, but he's totally signing with the Giants. And then he signs with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I just want to be clear here that there's always the potential that there's a team that is keeping it extremely quiet that we don't know about with Watson. But I think at least when you talk about the four that are competing against each other, they're all looking at it as a group of four.
It'll be really interesting to see how that part of it plays out. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you guys. And I appreciate you bumping it a day because, yeah, the Watson thing ran me ragged. Like,
Charles, we will do anything for you.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate it. I always love texting Joe at like 4 a.m. going, hey, man, I'm about to go to bed finally.
which is like a half hour before I woke up.
Yeah, and then like it hit Joe, and I'm like, yeah, it didn't matter. My phone started ringing at 6 o'clock, so I don't know what would have happened on 2 hours of sleep. I mean, it probably would have been fun, but
oh yeah,
glad that I got an additional bit. So thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem. We appreciate you, Charles Robinson, the best in the business at what he does. We'll come back. We'll react to what Charles had to say there. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Doing 102.5 The Game tomorrow night for the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade. You can have drink specials, enter to win Preds tickets, and watch the Preds take on the Philadelphia Flyers. It's the Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beercade, located at 114 Second Avenue South downtown. The puck drops at 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, he's going to be joined by Matt Duchene coming up at 9 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on another big win last night for the Nashville Predators. Preds are rolling right now, 5 out of their last 6, playing very, very good hockey. We'll get Duchene's thoughts on that coming up here in about 10 minutes. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Shane from Ashland City on the text line says, that man, talking about Brady, found out the stay-at-home dad life is not for him. 40 days, that's all it took with Tom Brady. We think that's it, Rex Road? Brady's like, man, I'm not doing this. I can't stay at home that long.
You know, yeah, I could see it. I could see it. The grass is always greener, right? And then,
honestly,
you know,
like the more you think about what Charles said there in terms of, like, we'll probably never know this, but maybe he did want to go somewhere else and then just kind of realized that that wasn't going to happen and said, all right, well, I'll play football, but I'm not going anywhere else, so I'm back with Tampa. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to think about what Charles kind of laid out there in terms of how the Bucks handled that. I mean, I thought that was interesting. Bruce Arians is very stern in Indy about the idea of Brady going somewhere else. And then, of course, Stroud, who's written about the Bucks for a long time with information on other quarterbacks you're looking at. So it's a little bit of – feels like the Bucks did some things on their end to kind of massage this into happening, but still ultimately it's still just like, obviously I was surprised. I mean, I put it at like 5%, so I'll take a big L on that one. And you know, the fact that he did it during the brackets is just, yes, thank you. I'll take that big L, but, but man, I mean that fast. And you got all these Tom Brady specials and everything, they just need to just tack on 5 minutes at the end. And also, how about the dude who paid, what did he pay? He paid
$518,000.
$518,000 for the Tom Brady ball. I mean, Brady's got to pay him back, doesn't he?
Got to buy that from him.
Brady's got to restore the value that he thought he had in that football, right?
I mean,
he has to.
Times are tough money-wise, and I don't know if Brady can do that, man.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. You know, kids going to college soon. You know, you gotta.
Giselle's got it, guys. No worries.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, yeah.
So do we think that maybe Brady wanted to go to the Titans, but then he discovered like how effusive John Robinson was in his praise for Tannehill and said, you know what? I guess that's not happening. Going back to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking is that once again, he desperately wanted to go to the Titans. That's all he's ever really wanted. In life, and the Titans again just shun him. So big regret there someday, I would imagine.
0-2.
Yep.
I'm interested to see where Deshaun Watson ends up. It was fascinating, and Charles didn't throw out a favorite there, but the idea of Deshaun Watson to Atlanta has come out of nowhere the last couple of days, and apparently some teams think that may be the spot where he ends up landing. That would be quite interesting to see what happens with Matt Ryan at that point as well.
It's really intriguing, and it's kind of like that late breaking team that comes in, and then you start adding everything together, and you're like, okay, it makes sense. I mean, if you're Arthur Smith right now, talk about just a completely different potential trajectory.
Yeah,
if this ends up happening for you, and again, from the Watson perspective, other than the going home and all that stuff, the idea, I would be very intrigued by working with Arthur Smith based on, it's still not a big sample size, but based on what he did here in particular with that offense, I'd be intrigued by that if I were Deshaun Watson.
Liam on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tom Brady is to competitiveness what Aaron Rodgers is to narcissism, but they are neighbors at the top of their mountains. How about that?
Well, I think Tom Brady gets a Mount Rushmore carve out of the narcissism mountain too. Let's give him credit where it's due. And frankly, you know, I think Rodgers, I mean, they're both great competitors, great players, right?
Yeah.
They just both have to have people talking about him at all times.
Well, and it's worked this offseason for both of them.
I mean, basically, Brady is Marcia Brady.
Yes.
And Rodgers is Jan Brady.
Yes.
So for people who get that reference, you know what I'm talking about. Marcia.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Predators forward Matt Duchene. We'll get his thoughts on another big win last night for the Nashville Predators. That's up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.